First off, this is called the water pouring ceremony. In Hebrew, it's called Beit, or house of the water pouring, Beit HaShoeva. And it is going to be a combination of a bunch of ceremonies. It's not just one, there's like five different ceremonies within it that are all going to be done in conjunction. Okay? So it's a mass production. This is the biggest ceremony of the entire year in the temple. And so your first is the ceremony of the lulav. And when I say the first, it's the first we're going to talk about, okay? But one of these. Let me see if I can get it. I was going to bring mine, and I had taken it apart. But you have the lulav, okay? So the lulav we call in Hebrew the arba minim, which means arba's four, and minim means species. So we have four species. We have the date palm. A date palm in Hebrew is called tamar, but the spine of the date palm is called lulav. And that's where we get the name. Then we have the myrtle, which is called hadas, okay? Esther's name was Hadassah, which is the feminine form of it. Then we have the willow, which is Arva. Willow, here, no, I don't see any willow on this one. Here it is, willow. Okay, somewhere there's willow, okay? And then we have what's called the etrog. Yep. The ceremony, there's two ceremonies you do with the lulav. What you've been doing in the regular service is what is done in the water pouring with the lulav, okay? So, in the scriptures, have you ever seen what it says that you are to do, make a wave offering? How do you make a wave offering? Do you stand there and go, okay? That's not how it's done. It's called tenufa. Tenufa. And let me give you an illustration here. You have, in the book of Ephesians, it says there's one immersion, okay, one baptism, right? But in the book of Hebrews, it says the doctrine of immersions is one of the elementary principles of the faith. And in reality, we have, there's one immersion into Messiah, but there are different types of immersions. Like, for instance, when one is a proselyte, becomes Jewish, there's an immersion. When one's going to the temple, there's an immersion. To go into the inner courtyards of the temple, there's an immersion. A woman that has been through a menstrual cycle goes to an immersion. There's an immersion for preparing spiritually for a festival. And so, you have all kinds of, every immersion is performed exactly the same. What's different is you state what that immersion was for. So there's not a different way you do the immersion. You say a blessing before, and it's the same blessing here regardless of what immersion you're doing. It says, "Blessed are you, O Lord, our God, King of the universe, set us apart by your commandments and commanded us to immerse." And so you go in and then you spread your fingers, you spread your toes, and you go into the water three times. And there's somebody to witness it. They say, you're totally immersed or you weren't. If your hair floated to the top, you have to do it again. And so he says, kosher, that's the immersion. That's what John the Baptist did, is he witnessed the immersions. Okay, so in Tenufa, we have to wave the ober, right, at Passover. So it's going to be the barley flour is put into a special vessel, and then they put all the various ingredients, like the frankincense, they have to put salt, they have to put oil, and they put it in, and then the priest is going to hold this vessel up, and he's going to wave it towards the Holy of Holies three times. One, two, three. Then he'll wave it to the right, then he waves it behind him, then he waves it to the left, he waves it to heaven, waves it to the earth. All right, so Shavuot, we have to do two loaves of bread. They're called the Shtei Halakim, which means two loaves. And we have two living lambs, and we put them between these great big loaves, and the priest takes and he waves them three times towards the Holy of Holies. Three times to the right, three times behind him, three times to the left, three times to heaven, three. They're choke. We love. Abba Benib. We wave them. Now, it's very interesting. It's harder to do with a lemon than an etrog. You have a stem, and then you have the, what's called the patub, all right? So you pick it up where the stem is up, and you have, this is in your right hand, and the etrog is in your left hand. You pick it up, and then you say the blessing. Okay, so Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam, Asher Kidashanu B'Mitzvotav B'Tzibrono HaMitzvot Lulav. Okay, once you've said the blessing, then you turn the etrog to where that the stem is down, and you place them together. And you, three times to the Hall of Holies, three times to the right, three times to the left, three times to heaven, three times to the left, three times to heaven, and three times to earth. Okay? So that's tenufa. That's a wave offering. All right. Now, you also wave it during the Beit HaShoiva. Okay? And they're going to, there's another ceremony. It's called the Halib that we do at the same time. So they're going to have this where they bring the water in. They get the water down at the Shiloh pool, they bring it in, and they're going to bring it into the inner courtyard. They're going to also have another priest with wine, and they're going to go up on the altar, and they're going to pour this water and wine over the altar. Now, as they're doing that, the choir is going to sing Psalm 113 to 118. Now, the priest is only the priest. The reason it's only the priest is in the area that they do this. The altar, only the priests are allowed to go. So the priests are going to take their lulavim, and they're going to have their lulavim holding it like this, with the stem down, holding it, and they're going to go around the altar. Okay, so they're going to go around the altar in the first few verses of Psalm 118. Which is what you've been singing. Ki le'olam hasto, hodu la'Adonai. Okay, those are the four verses. And then you have another place in the middle where it says, save now, O Lord, save now, prosperous, O Lord, prosperous. They wave the lulavs at those. And on the last part, again, you repeat the ki le'olam hasto part. And they wave, just like you've been learning here. Okay, they'll wave and follow to the right, to the left, up and down. Okay, now I've been trying to figure out how they did this. Because for me, if I'm walking and trying to do this, and this, and this, I can't do it. Okay, especially if you get like 500 people at one time doing it. So I think what they did is that when they came to Psalm 118, everybody stopped. And then they did the as they're singing, okay? And then when that stops, and they move forward till they get to the middle of the psalm, and it has, and then they stop, they wave, and you can imagine how dramatic this is, okay? So, how is the mitzvah means commandment of lulav? In the first day of the festival, fellow Shabbat, they will bring the lulavim to the temple mount, and the hazanim, the hazan is going to be like the stewards or the cantor. Receive them and place them in order at the top of the portico, and the elders would leave them in the office. The office just means the chamber. And they teach them to say, my lulav is given as a gift to the person into whose hand it may fall. Don't worry about that part. And the next day, they will rise early and come to the attendants, would throw them before them. They would snatch and beat one another. When the Beit Din, that means the court, saw this was becoming dangerous, they ordained that everyone should perform the lulav ritual at home. Okay, so we're going to go for it. The recitation of the Hallel. Now, the Hallel is going to be Psalms 113 to 118. You don't do the Hallel just any time of the year. Hallel's done at Passover, it's done at Shavuot, it's done at Sukkot. It's up Psalms 113 to 118. The recitation of the Hallel and the rejoicing, 8. It means it was done for all 8 days. How is this? It teaches that everybody is obliged to recite the Hallel and to honor the last of the festival just like the other days of the festival. It's talking about Simchat Torah or Shmini Atzeret. How is the Sukkah Commandment 7? Alright, we're going to go forward from here. Alright, how is the mitzvah of the Arva? Okay, Arva is going to be willows. Now, this ceremony, I'm going to get some people to help me with. They go to a place, it's going to be to the west of Jerusalem. It's called Motza. And when David was trying to move the ark up to Jerusalem, you remember that he did a big mess up, and a guy got killed. And so they stopped, and they put the ark there. That was a place called Kiryat Yerim. And that's Motza. They're the same place. They just have two names. But Motza, I can't tell you the reason for this. Motza in Hebrew means to be sent. Okay? And I think it's important because they're going to draw the water that they're going to use in this ceremony from the Shiloach pool, which also means to be sent. Okay. So they had this group of priests on the very first day. They're going to go down to Motza and they're going to cut willow trees. Not the little willows like you and I have in the four species. These willows are going to stand over the top of the ark. Right? Not the ark, the altar. The altar is gigantic. Okay? The altar is 15 feet high. It is on each side, it's 32 cubits by 32 cubits, it's over 61 feet on each side. Yeah, that's 20 yards. Okay, it's 20 yards by 20 yards by 20 yards by 20 yards, and the ramp coming up to it is 61 feet. Okay, now this is the altar. Yes. Okay, so they're going to put these willows, they cut these willows, and they're going to put them all around the altar. Okay? All the way around the altar. They're placing these willows. However, along with the lulav, I just wanted to get a... Alright. So, they have the altar 61 feet by 61 feet by 61 feet by 61 feet with a 61 foot ramp leading to it called the Kevish. And then you have it's 15 foot high. And they have to place willows all around it. Now the willows are going to stick out over the top several feet. So they're going to be 18 feet, 18 feet. They're big willows. And they all have to be in procession. They do this. We'll see how often they do it. Behind them, all the other priests have their lulav. And so that while they are circling, they're not just out there walking, the choir singing Psalm 113 through 118. Okay. So they will gather from their large young willow branches, set them up at the sides of the altar with their tops bending over the top of the altar. Yeah, have y'all noticed something on the willow, by the way? It dries. Now, I can't figure out. I was talking with some people last night. So I can't figure out. They have this huge fire on the altar. I mean, it's gigantic. And here, you bring one of the most combustible materials right there. How did it keep from going up in a blaze? I think it was the hand of God. You know, and that's the only way I could explain it. All right. So, with their tops below the top, they would sound a tikia, a tura, and a tikia. These are going to be blasts, not on the shofar, but on the silver trumpets. Each day they made one circuit around the altar, and they would say,
please, O Lord, save us now. Now, at that expression, they waive this. The people with the willas are going to actually do the willas as a tanufa. So you're basically going to make it go far. I don't know how they did it. I think they were exhausted at the end of this. And then, but here you have a problem. You're moving trees with all these people. So everybody has to do it in conjunction. Okay? So please, O Lord, make us prosper now. Rabbi Yehuda says, Adivahu, save now. And on that day, this is going to be the seventh day of the festival. This is called Hoshana Rabbah. They would circle the altar seven times. Now, that is the day that Yeshua cried out. Since the last day, the great day of the festival, Hoshana Rabbah, Yeshua cried out and said, if any man thirst, let him come to me and drink. Out of his belly will flow rivers of living water. When they would depart, what would they say? This beauty is yours, O altar. This beauty is yours, O altar. Rabbi Eliezer says, to God and to you, O altar. To God and you, O altar. Okay, now, y'all can sit, but thank you for coming up because it gives you a visual representation. You're able to see and you can imagine it in your mind, and it becomes really dramatic. As it was before, the last day has another name. It's called Palm Twigs Beating Day, okay? Palm Twigs Beating Day. Yeah, okay. The date palm, the lulav, as it was performed on weekdays, so was it performed on Shabbat, except that they would gather them on the eve of the Sabbath, place them in golden basins so that they should not wither. Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka said, they used to bring palm branches, and they beat them on the ground at the sides of the altar, and that day was called Palm Twigs Beating Day. Now, there's another, I didn't put the next Mishnah in, but it says at that point, then all the kids eat their etrog, okay? Because basically it's over. All right, how was the water libation observed? Okay, so water libation is taking place while all that we've seen is taking place. So a golden flagon holding three logs would be filled at the Shiloach. Shiloach's about a half a mile down from the Temple Mount, but downhill. It's at the bottom of the city of David, bottom of Mount Moriah, the Temple Mount is up. Three logs is going to be about 1.5 gallons. 1.5 liters, excuse me. 1.5 liters. When they reach the water gate, now the water gate, I'm going to show you, let me go forward. This building right here, the priest, the high priest, is going to come from the south. He will come through. Do you see this little, this is where he exits, where he comes up from a tunnel right here, and he will come in, and these are the mikvahot. This is the mikvah for the men. This is the mikvah for the women. This is the toilets. He will come in, and he's going to go into this building. Now, this building is called the Beit of Tinus. And inside that building is where the Sanhedrin met. It's also where he had his chambers. His chambers have three different names called the Lishkat Ha'etz, the Lishkat Parhedrin, the Lishkat Parhedrin. Okay? And he has to change his clothes. He can't wear those priestly garments out of the inner courtyard, which we're told in the book of Ezekiel. Okay, so he comes through here. Now, when he gets to this point, when this gate is called, there's a gate on this side of the building. It's called the Sha'ar Hamayim, the water gate. When he gets there, with the silver trumpet, they're going to sound a tikiah, a terurah, and a tikiah. Always get them mixed up, which is which. John, you know which ones? All right, and the Shevarim is the three times. Okay. All right, so They're blowing these, and that is going to be really important, okay? Because we're going to have something happen in just a moment. We're not told that in this Mishnah. So there's another ceremony that gives us an element that comes in. But this is going to be, by the way, the silver trumpet, when it's blown, sounds just like a shofar. You can't tell the difference. I can't tell the difference. So I'm going to go forward and bring in what happens when the shofar or the silver trumpet blows. It is the signal for everybody to go quiet. To go quiet. All right. It's going to be the ceremony of the flute. A flute is not an incredibly loud instrument, but they have a single flute that will play. I don't know what it played. I don't know what it sounded like, but I do know this, that the word for a flute is chayil, like C-H-A-Y-I-L, chayil. Challah, you know what challah is, the bread that we eat for Shabbat, okay? Challah, the challah that was done in the temple did not look like the challah you have on your Sabbath table. Why? You have something in your bread that wasn't in the bread in the temple, leavened. Ah, have you ever looked at the matzah that you buy for Passover? And it'll have the word challah on it. Okay? But the bread that was in the temple was unleavened bread if it came to the altar. The shtei halakim is the only bread that we have that wasn't leavened, and it was not allowed to touch the altar. So when you have matzah, you look at it, it's pierced, right? It's the only way it'll cook. And so when I see the word the flute or the word for the flute, it comes up in several different ceremonies. It makes me think of the pierced wood. It gives attention to the Messiah. It gives attention to everything. But the trumpets blew in order for the people to be quiet. Now, I want to give you just a little bitty piece here. The blessing we say when we blow a shofar is the same blessing that you say for a silver trumpet. It just changes the word. But it's unique. And I'm going to guess, I can guarantee you there was a blessing for blowing the flute. There's a blessing for everything. I thought I did. I didn't mention that. The word hayel means pierced wood. Yeah, that's why I did that connection. Thank you, Debbie. And it had holes in it. Hayel. Hayel. Like C-H-A-Y-I-L, by guess. But it means pierced wood. Yeah, that's an important point. She's good. She helps me. Okay. So, the blessing you say when you blow a shofar is, "Blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who has commanded us to hear the sound of the shofar." Now, that's unusual, because you would think the person blowing it would say, "Blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who has commanded us to blow the shofar." But it wasn't the blowing that God wanted you to pay attention to. It was the hearing. And it's being emphasized on the flute. So I want to take it a step further. This is me. This is the way I see it. So understand that I'm not speaking from any source other than my personal insight. But I think that the reason that the whole temple went quiet to hear that flute is the message that all of us need to hear the sound of the pierced wood. Okay, relate that to the Messiah. All right. This was the flute of the Beit HaShoevah, the house of the water droid, since it does not override the Sabbath or Yom Tov, not Yom Toy. They said, now, this becomes important. They said, whoever had not seen the rejoicing of the Beit HaShoevah has not seen rejoicing in his life. We're going to come back to that. All right. So the flute has played. Now, in this time, the high priest has put on what we call the golden vestments. You know, the ones with the bells, the pomegranates. He's got everything on. And he will come out, and usually he has with him the deputy high priest. He's called the Sagan. So they're going to ascend the altar. Okay, so they're coming from the south. They're going to come up the altar. This way is the Holy of Holies. This way is going to be the Court of the Women and so forth. Straight ahead is east, all right? So he would ascend the ramp and turn to his left. So which way is he going? No. Don't worry about the clockwise, counterclockwise here. He's turning towards the Holy of Holies. Temple buildings over here. He's going to the southwestern corner of the altar. Two bowls of silver stood there. Rabbi Yehuda says they were plaster, but their surfaces had been darkened by the wine, and both had apertures like two thin snouts. One hole was wide, while the other was narrow, so that both might empty at the same time. The west room was for water, the east room for wine. If he poured of water into the west room, if he poured of water into the wine, or of wine into the water, he is fulfilled. Rabbi Yehuda says he would pour from one log all 8 days. To him who poured, they would say, raise your hand. For once, someone poured the libation onto his feet, and all the populace pelted him with exegreme. Okay, this is going to be Alexander Yudae, who was a Sadducee. The Sadducees rejected the water libation ceremony is not being commanded in the Torah. It actually is. Okay, so I want to show you just a few pictures real quick. Here is the Bait of Tinus. This is the water gate. This is where he has his chambers, and he changes in his clothes. While he's changing into those garments is when the flute is playing. And then he will come out, and the priests are finishing doing their circuit and placing the willows back against the altar. Okay, everybody follow with me so far? All right. Now, here is the inner courtyard. These are the corner buildings. This is the building that he comes through. Here is the altar right here. I'll see if I can get you a better picture. Here is the altar, and they come around like this. One time a day, the first 6 days, seven times on the seventh day. Okay? Now, I want to talk about the antiquity. By the way, I left a slide out. It was an oversight on my part. But they go to the Shiloh pool in order to draw the water. And the water is going to be drawn in a golden vessel, and the wine is in a silver vessel. Okay? When the water and the wine are poured out, that is considered the highest ceremony of the temple year. Now, I want to talk real briefly about a dream. The dream of Jacob. Remember when Jacob was fleeing from his brother, Esau? And so he goes north, and he goes to Beit El. And he lays down, it says he laid down in that place. The Hebrew word for place is makom. But it is also a word that is used for Hashem. It says, blessed be the Makom. And three times in the verse, it's going to use the word Makom. That he came to a certain Makom, and he took a stone from that Makom, and he laid down in that Makom to sleep. Okay, so he goes to sleep. What does he see? He sees the gates of heaven open, and he sees the angels ascending and descending. Now he wakes up and he says, surely this is the house of God. And he takes the stone that he slept on and he anoints it. Okay? So let's talk about this a little bit. First off, in the Ezekiel temple, that we have huge boundaries, much bigger than what we have today. In the Ezekiel temple, it will go all the way to where Beit El is today. And so what he saw was actually looking into the future, when that would encompass, the temple would encompass that area. Secondly, Jewish worship is based upon that dream that the objective of worship is to ascend to Hashem. That it, as you ascend, he will descend to meet with you. In the Passover Seder, you have 15 parts to it, 15 steps. These remind us of the 15 Psalms of Ascent. We have 15 steps going from the court of the women to the upper courtyard, to the Azarah. Okay, so this ceremony, which is the highest point of worship in the year, the pouring out of the water over the altar, this ceremony takes place in the highest court. In the highest court. And the people ascend up to that court and perform this ceremony of rejoicing before him. And the tenufah, by the way, the wave offering, and when they're waving, doing the halim, these are all seen as acts of rejoicing. Okay, so in the evening, though, we have the second part of the ceremony. And it is joined to the first part. I'm going to ask you a question. It's going to be a little bit difficult in a moment. This ceremony takes place in the court of the women. So they have to go down to the court of the women. They have to go through the gate, called the Nicanor Gate, and then they go down those 15 steps. So it's just like Jacob's dream. They ascended up. Now, they have worshipped before him, and now in the whole sense of rejoicing will take over. Remember what I showed you before. It says, he who has never seen the rejoicing of the Simhat Beit HaShoimah, or the rejoicing of the house of water pouring, has never seen rejoicing in his life. All right. So, I want to cover this. The Simhat Beit HaShoimah takes place in the court of the women. So it's at a lower court. It takes place as soon as it gets dark. So the other is in the morning, in the daytime. And so at night, you go into this courtyard and you're going to do the ceremony, and it lasts till daylight the next morning. All night. And you do this all week long. Okay? All right. Now, I want to deal with the antiquity of this. Then we're going to look at the Simhat Beit HaShoimah. In Exodus 25:8, it says, let them make me a sanctuary. This is the word in Hebrew. Mikdash. This letter, these three letters spell the word holy, kadosh, mikdash. That I may dwell among them. This is the word shekinah. You know the word shekinah. Have you ever heard of the shekinah glory? There is no such thing. It is an invented Christian term. And there is the shekinah, or the shekinah, and then we have the kavod, or the glory. But there are two different ways that Hashem manifests himself before us. The Shekinah is the dwelling presence of God, whereas the Kavod is the radiance. And so the word Shekinah here, Shekinti, it comes from the same word as Shekinah. The Mishkan means dwelling place. The Mishkan is the tabernacle. Okay, so it says, let them make me a sanctuary that I may dwell among them. And here's what I wanted to get you exactly as I show you. In other words, you can't change it. The pattern here is Tavnit, this word, of the Mishkan. Here's Mishkan right here. And the Tavnit here, or the blueprint of all its furnishings. I put this word in. This is a Tanakh, Jewish Publication Society, they left out this word, and. I put it in. Here it is right here. That letter, Vav. It adds the word and. Why is it so important? because it changes the tense of the phrase. It is a continuing tense. Great Jewish scholar Rashi said that based upon that one letter, this command applies to every single generation. It continues forward. All right? So shall you make it. You can't change it. Now that becomes important because there is a teaching out there that the Jews added the ceremony. They can't add a ceremony. You can't add a ceremony to the temple. It is structured. God said in his word, you cannot change this. All right. Now, in 1 Chronicles 28:11, it says, David gave his son Solomon the plan. The word plan here is tavnit again, blueprint, for the houses and storerooms, upper chambers, inner chambers, and the place of the ark cover. Verse 12, it says, plan of all that he had by the Spirit. Here's the word, baruach. Okay, so it's not something that man put together. It came directly from God. All right, and surrounding chambers, all the treasures of the house. Now, for the divisions of the priests and the Levites and all the work, this is Ochal, which is in all Amalekhet, the work, Avodat. Avodat, the Avodah means the services. He gave them the services. He gave how all of this was to be structured, and that becomes important. Now, we find, I'm going to tell you something on the altar. Every day you have a wine offering. There is a wine libation that's made in the morning and in the afternoon. Now, there is a penalty if any Kohen drinks alcohol and comes into the inner courtyard. There is a death penalty. And they didn't do it. I mean, it's not like they just carried people out of there and executed them. People just didn't do it. They could go into the court of the women and drink. And in fact, during Sukkot, they would drink. Okay? But they can't go into the inner courtyard having drunk. All right? Now, the water is not allowed to be poured on the altar except at Sukkot. It is the only time of the year that water is poured on the altar. And so wine is poured every day, but water never, except at Sukkot. So, y'all know who Tyler Rosenquist is, anybody? Tyler writes a lot of books and everything. Very good, tremendous lady. She sent me this, 1 Samuel 7:6. They assembled at Mizpah, they drew water and poured it out before the Lord, which means they poured it on the altar. They fasted that day, and there they confessed that they had sinned against the Lord, and Samuel acted as chieftain of the Israelites at Mizpah. The reason they're fasting is the Philistines are about to have battle with them. Now, people said, that can't be Sukkot because they're fasting. There is no rule that you cannot fast at Sukkot. People fasted all the time at Sukkot. The fact that they're pouring out water on the altar, it indicates it's Sukkot. Now, there's one other thing. I didn't have the slide with me for this. I tried to find it on the internet before I came down here, but my daughter just taught me how to get on the internet about 30 minutes before Susan arrived to tell me I was late. Okay, so we have in the book of Numbers, okay, in Numbers chapter 28, it starts with, here's the tamid offering, the eternal offering. You have to offer lamb in the morning, lamb in the afternoon. Then it goes into the Sabbath offerings. Then it goes into the new moon. Then it starts with Passover, goes to Shavuot, goes to Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot. And it tells you this is what we call the Musaf offerings, which means additional. And so at Sukkot, if you'll remember, it has this real strange thing that on the first day you give 13 bulls. Second day you give 12. Third day you give 11. Fourth day, 10, 9, 8, and 7. It gives a total of 70 bulls, and it's understood that these are for the nations. Now it says for each one of these, and it's libation with it. Now it doesn't say it's wine libation, it just says and it's libation with it. Now every letter, and Yeshua himself said this, that every letter has meaning. Every letter came forth from God, every letter will be fulfilled. And so you have three extra letters in those passages, in three of the verses, talking about the bulls and the offerings that are made, where it's talking about the libations. You have an extra bilb, and then an extra yod, and an extra bilb. It spells out the word bayim. What does bayim mean? Water. Water. Okay, so it is in there embedded in the Torah. All right. So, at the conclusion of the first day of the festival. Yes, okay. You have three extra letters, and the three extra letters are going to be in the portion where it's talking about the 70 bulls. Yeah. No. It's all in the libation where it's talking about the bulls. On the first day, you have 13 bulls and then six lambs and so forth and a libation. And then the next day, you have 12 bulls, six lambs, six, you know, whatever combination and a libation. And it uses three extra letters. The first one is a bilb, the second one is a yod, and the third one is a bilb. Okay? And it spells out by you. I can send you the actual. I thought I had it with me, and I didn't have it with me. Okay. All right. At the conclusion of the first day of the festival. So, we start on what day? In the calendar, what day do we start Sukkot on? What? Tishri 15, okay? So, what day is going to be the first Simchat Beit HaShoeva? What? Nope. The 16th. The morning you did, on the 15th, you did the pouring of the water and the wine over the altar. You put the willows around the altar. You danced with the lulavim, the choir sang the halim. When it gets dark, they're going to have the Simchat Beit HaShoeva, so it's now the 16th. So you don't have one for the night of the 15th. You have one for the night of the 16th. Are you following? Yeah. Yeah, the day begins with nightfall, the new day. All right, they go down to the court of the women and make a great improvement there. So what is the improvement? They're going to build a balcony around for the women. Now, contrary to what a lot of people believe, in the first century, women, men and women worshipped in the synagogues right next to each other. It was only in a later period that they separated the two groups. But at Sukkot, they built the balcony. Now, the reason is that, number one, in chapter 14 of Deuteronomy, it talks about the people drinking at that time and they're rejoicing. The second thing is that men, and let me jump forward. Right here. The pious and the men of good deeds would dance before them holding burning torches in their hands. And they're dancing with all these torches. And in fact, it says that some of them would have swords that they danced with. And so you didn't want to have the women and the children down where they could get hurt. All right, so they're going to be separated. We're going to go back over here. It didn't matter. All right? I'll tell you this interesting part to this. We have the Mishnah. This is from the Mishnah. The what we call Gemara. Gemara is going to be commentary on a Mishnah. So they ask the question in the Gemara, Sukkah 51b. And the question is, Where did they get the authority to build this balcony? You cannot change anything in the temple. Now, the Haftar reading for the first, for the 15th of Tishri, it's always a Shabbat. So you have a Torah reading and a Haftar reading. That's going to be from Zechariah 14. But the custom is they read from Zechariah 12 through 14. The Haftar for the intermediate Shabbat, the Shabbat that falls during Sukkot, is going to be starting in the latter part of Ezekiel 37 and going into chapter 39. Okay, so that's going to be Gog and Magog. Now, there is a reason for that. We're told in the tractate Megillah 31a that these were the readings at the time of the temple. So, the Jews believe that in the future there will be a war with Gog and Magog, and that Gog and Magog will come down and attack them and basically defeat them, but that God is going to defeat Gog and Magog on their behalf. And so their rejoicing, part of the Sukkot rejoicing, is seen as rejoicing over this future enemy that will be defeated. Okay? So, just bear that in mind. Okay? That's going to be all your elements that you have. There were golden candlesticks there. The word that is used here is going to be menorot. But they're huge. And four golden bowls at the top of them. Four ladders for each one, and four boys from among the young priests. In their hands were jugs of oil holding 120 logs, which they would pour into each bowl. Okay, so let me show you. Let me go forward and find another picture. Here. See the four posts? And each post has four lights on it. So how many lights do they have? 16 lights. All right? And these are gigantic. Okay? So this is an 8-story high building. So these are gigantic posts. And they have 120 logs of oil going to each one. Let's go back. All right, here we're going to look at, I don't want to put this picture in here. This is taken from the balcony. So it's looking down on the court of the women. This is called the Nicanor Gate. These are the 15 steps. All right, from the worn-out trousers of the Kohanim, in their belts they would make wicks. And with these, they would kindle the four lights, or 16 lights. There was not a courtyard in Jerusalem that was not illuminated by the light of the house of the water drawing. Okay? So here, now, along this side, right over here, we're outside the temple. That's the Kidron Valley. On this side is the Teropian Valley. Okay, so here's the Kidron. All right, so I'm going to go to Isaiah 9:2. We have a reference to the Simhat Bein HaShoevah in the book of Isaiah. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who dwelt in the land of the shadow of death. Where do you know the expression, the shadow of death, from? The valley of the shadow of death. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Where is that? No. Where is it physically? Where is that valley at? It's the Kidron Valley. It's the Kidron Valley. And the Kidron Valley goes right beside the temple. Right beside the temple. It says, those who dwelt in the land of the shadow of death, which is the Kidron Valley next to the temple, upon them a light has shined. You have multiplied the nation and increased its joy. It's the season of our joy. They rejoice before you according to the joy of harvest. It's Sukkot. As men rejoice when they divide the spoil. I should have had a closing bracket so the end of that. Now, the portion there is men rejoice when they divide the spoil. The next two verses are going to deal with Gog and Magog, the defeat of Gog and Magog. And then guess what it says? Unto us a son is born. It's prophesied the birth of the Messiah at Sukkot. Yes. Yeah. Well, you remember Yeshua said when they were crying out to him, Hosanna the highest, and then some of them were crying saying, stop your people from saying this. He said, if they didn't say it, even the stones would cry out. Well, what I believe he is referred to is the tombstones. He's saying that the dead know who he is, and the dead would cry out that he's the Messiah. All right. So we've already read this, but we'll read it again. The pious, the men of good deeds, would dance before them holding burning torches in their hands and would recite before them words of song and praise. The Levites would play harps, lyres, cymbals, trumpets, and innumerable musical instruments of the 15 steps leading down to the court of the Israelites, to the court of the women, which correspond to the 15 songs of ascent, the book of Psalms, of which the Levites would stand with their instruments and sing songs. Two Kohanim would stand at the uppermost gate, which leads down from the court of the Israelites to the court of the women. So here, they're going to be on these steps. Now, that doesn't look very big, but believe me, you can put several hundred people there. Easy. It's gigantic. Two trumpets in their hands. The cock crowed, okay? In Hebrew, it's the word gever, which means crier. You're not allowed to have poultry in Jerusalem when the temple is standing. Now, there's no problem with Peter denies Yeshua before the cock crowed, because the word for the crier in Hebrew is the same word as for a rooster. It's gever. And so the crier of the temple cried. He gave a threefold cry every morning before dawn, and that threefold cry was for the Kohanim to go to the 12 steps. For the Levitical choir to go to their post. It's called the Dukkud. And for the Ma'amad, which are the 24 representative districts that have sent delegations to stand in the court of Israel while the Amidah is going to be lifted up in the incense. Okay? And they'll stand here and they pray. And he calls for these three groups to go to their positions. Okay? It proves that it was originally given in Hebrew, not in Greek. The translator chose the wrong word. All right, they blew tikiah, teruah, tikiah. When they reached the 10th step, they blew. So you have to understand this. Notice they're going to have where they sing all these songs on the first step. Then they'll step down a step. Then they sing all these songs. They have guys out there dancing and everything. And then they step down a step. And then all of this is going on. It's taken hours, and you see them coming down. And this whole thing, it's like this wave of people coming down, and this rejoicing is just going to, when they reach the 10th step, they blew tikiah, teruah, tikiah. They would continue to blow until they reached the gate leading out eastward. They're going to go all the way across this courtyard to the eastern gate. They have to do this before the sun comes up. Okay, because what they do is really important. Then all would turn their faces to the west. They're facing the east at this point. And it's dark. And then they all will turn around and they face back towards the Holy of Holies. Because their fathers in the book of Ezekiel, when they reach the gate leading out eastward, they all turn their faces to the west and declare, our fathers who were in this place turned their backs to the temple and their faces to the east, and they would bow eastward to the sun. As for us, our eyes are turned to the Lord. Rabbi Yehuda says, they will repeat and say, we are for God and to God our eyes. Now, there were never less than 21 tikioter blasts in the temple. That is, on a day. Every day they have at least 21 blasts with the silver trumpets. Not more than 48. Each day, 21 blasts in the temple, 3 for the opening of the gates, 9 for the daily morning sacrifice, 9 for the daily afternoon sacrifice, and during the Musaf, remember that's your additional, sacrificial services, they would add another 9. On the eve of Shabbat, 6 additional would be blown. 3 to signal the people to cease working, 3 to mark the boundary between the sacred and the profane. I talked about that earlier. Lehamad Deville, Ben Kodesh Lechol, that's the blowing, the trumpeting stone. Didn't y'all love the trumpeting stone? On the Friday within the festival, there were 48. 3 for the opening of the gates, 3 for the uppermost gate, 3 for the lower gate, 3 for filling the water. That's down at the Shiloh pool. 3 for filling the water. Okay? So the priest and the high priest and usually the deputy priest, they have a parade going down from the Temple Mount. And they go to the Shiloh pool and they draw the water. When they have the water, then they blow the blast on the silver trumpets, and everybody in Jerusalem knows that the priest is coming up bearing the water, and it breaks into rejoicing. Let me tell you what happened yesterday, or Sunday, when they did this in Jerusalem. And I got to apologize. I was actually going to show you a film of it happening Sunday, and I was about to get it put on my computer whenever we found out I was late, and so I didn't get it done. What my friend told me is that the Muslims, if you've ever been to Jerusalem, or you probably have seen at least a video or something, that there's this really horrible shrieking call to worship that the Muslims have. I mean, it just great horribly. It sounds, you hear it all over the place. And they were so loud. The people were singing so loud, there was so much rejoicing, they totally drowned this guy out. Okay? Yes, John.
President Obama said that was the most beautiful sound in the world.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, let him have it. He can put it on his alarm clock, all right? Don't you agree with me? It is. Oh, boy. Oh, it's terrible. And they had a second one that the guy started, and everybody just immediately started singing, and you couldn't hear him at all and everything. So the 3 for the filling of the water, and 3 on top of the altar, that's when he pours the water and the wine, and 3 at that point. That's when I believe that Yeshua cried out. This is just my opinion, but that's what I believe is when the last 3 blasts that signified that the water and the wine had been poured out on the altar, that's when he cried, "If any man thirst, let him come to me and drink, and out of his belly will flow rivers of living water." And by the way, that comes out of the book of Joel. All right. 3 for filling the water, 3 on top of the altar, 9 for the daily morning sacrifice, 9 for the daily afternoon sacrifice, 9 for the additional sacrifice, 3 to signal the people to cease working, and 3 to mark the boundary between the sacred and the profane. All right, that is all of the slides, and like I said, I'll try to go ahead and get these put on, and maybe you can stop by later tonight. We're going to be packing up to leave. But I'll be glad to show you the pictures and everything. A couple things I need to go over with you just so that it goes smooth this evening. Generally what we do is we divide into several groups. And so we have a group of priests that are going to act out, they're going to get the willow. And so they're going to go to the west. We have a group that is going to the south, and they're going to get the water. And then we have the others that aren't going to either one of these directions, but we'll blow the shofarot, because we don't have silver trumpets, blow the shofarot when they have signified they've gotten the water. And then we'll come up, and the willows, the people will be coming in with the willows. They're not going to be 25 feet long or 20 feet long. Be a lot shorter. But we'll go around the altar, and they'll have some songs that they sing and everything. It's not going to be the halim, but it's going to be good. They'll go around the altar, and then at a certain point, we'll have the Kohen and the Segad, the high priest, the Kohen Gadol, and the deputy high priest go up, and they're going to signify, pour the water and the wine out, and then you'll hear people just breaking forth and rejoicing. And then after that, it will be probably close to dark. Excuse me. It'll be close to dark. And we're going to go into the Simchat Beit HaShoeva. When they light those torches, it sends shivers up your spine. And y'all just remember that you get the opportunity to experience something that people for 2,000 years haven't experienced. And is it kosher to do it? I guarantee it's kosher. They're doing it in Jerusalem. The leading authorities of the temple, the people that are in the forefront of rebuilding the temple, working to rebuild the temple, they just had a reenactment. They're doing it every year. And this is how people start to see and understand. And it causes you to see better. As you read in the Gospels, you read the epistles, you'll see all kinds of expressions and phrases you never saw before. Any questions? Yes, ma'am. That is in the Mishnah. Okay? And the Mishnah is divided into six sections. And so one of the second sections is called Seder, means order, Moed, the order of the appointed times. And so you have one of the books is going to be called Shabbat. You can figure out what the topic is. One is called Pesachim, for Passover. One is called Rosh Hashanah. One is called Sukkah. Okay, that's this one. It's all on the festival of Sukkot.
Another question is about, you're talking about the pool of Shiloh.
About the what?
The pool of Shiloh.
Okay.
Is that still running today? Is it something that's
going to
be used again?
Yeah, it's going to be used again. The Shiloh pool. For years, we knew pretty much that it was where it was. Because you could see, when you walked by it, there was this, looked like a swimming pool, basically, that was covered over with dirt. And lo and behold, they had a broken gas line or a water line. And so they sent a backhoe in there to do the repairs. They dug down and they hit some ancient work. And there is a law, and the only ones that don't follow it are the Muslims. But there is this law that if you find any ancient artifacts or there's a building or anything, you have to stop. You have to call the Israel Antiquities Authority. They send an archaeological team over, and they have to look at it. They sent the team over. They determined that it wasn't just a little find. It was a big find. They shut the whole thing down, and they started to excavate it. It was excavated by Dr. Ronnie Reich, who was in charge of it. Baruch Yuval, I believe, was one of the main archaeologists that worked on that. They have only excavated the corner at the southeastern corner, the whole eastern edge, and the northeastern corner. The rest of it is still underground. It's owned by the Greek Orthodox, and they won't give them permission to dig it up.
How big is it?
How big? Yeah, I'd say it's bigger than this room. Yeah, it's a big pool. It's a big pool. And they have a street that went up from there. They have now where you could go by a tunnel up from there. And that's where they went to draw the water, is to the Shiloh. I mean, just a couple days ago. Okay? The water from the Gihon Spring. Yeah.
Why
my guess is that very definitely you had kosher water. They're going to use the water they have on the mount for the mikvahot on the mount. And the high priest himself is going to immerse five times on Yom Kippur alone. But I think that it you have this aspect in the tractate, is it mikvahot? It's going to talk about five levels of water. And there,
there's
seven levels of water. Right. The highest form is going to be from a mountain spring. And that's what they get for this ceremony, as well as the red heifer and from the Shiloh. Yeah, that's right. Participate too. Yeah. They had over 300 people at the one in Jerusalem. A few years ago, they only had a handful, but people are starting. And here's one of the greatest things about it, is that this is a picture. Sukkot itself is a picture when Messiah comes. Well, what's it going to be like when he comes? I mean, what's the celebration going to be like? And can you describe it? This is where God has given you a chance to get a preview of the type of rejoicing that will be there. Yes.
And I know part of it is going to be the sacrifice and stuff, the red heifer.
Yes.
And I know that they have, don't they have information about that on the Temple Institute?
Yes. There have been. I've had some personal encounters with them. Yeah. Yeah, they've had two. I've had two. I knew both of them. Yes. Right. That's right. And they arrived at that. They were trying to get a red heifer. But they realized that it wasn't going to come by their trying to get wood. And the two that were born were not an effort of them trying any kind of programs they had genetic-wise or whatever. And they realized that the bull and the cow that had these two calves, two separate sets of cow parents, should not have been able to produce red calves. And here they came. And they realized, well, it's going to be a God thing. He's going to do it. He's going to give them what they need when they need it. And it's all going to come together. It's a, no, that is not true. Well, okay, there is no commandment that it be born in Israel, but it can't be born in the United States because, well, they tag the cattle. They can't leave the country without being tagged, and that would disqualify them. Okay? So it's going to be born in Israel and everything. Y'all want to hear a funny story? We had this calf, and it was out in the Elah Valley. And Elah Valley is where David fought Goliath. So I went out there twice with Rabbi Richmond, Rabbi Menachem Markover to inspect the lamb. My job was to raise the cow. It was on an Israeli cowboy ranch, and that's a whole funny story in itself. Okay, so we had to raise the money. We did it on television. We raised $30,000 to pay for the down payment on this calf. And the calf is going to be like $200,000. If she disqualifies, you don't get a refund. You just got an expensive piece of meat. Okay, so anyway, we got out there, and Rabbi Richmond told me that he said, I think she's going to disqualify today. And he had found some white hairs in her. But one of the cowboys, one of the Israeli cowboys, said, you should have been here earlier. Now, Rabbi Richmond, who's the international director for the Temple Institute, when he talks, you have to be right next to him because you won't hear what he says. I mean, you have he gets this close to you to talk, and he talks just like this. And when we're on television, they have to crank him up all the way. Then they have to crank all the rest of us way down. And so, anyway, now if Chaim gets, or Rabbi Richman gets talking politics, forget it. He's loud, okay? But anyway, this calf got out. So he's running over the hills. What are you going to do? How are you going to get this calf back? Because if you throw rocks at it, you're liable to make it go into a stand of cactus or something, and you're going to disqualify it. And so he said that Rabbi Richman was running behind this calf. He was going, "Holy cow, holy cow, holy cow." Yeah, you couldn't rope him. You can't grab him by the tail or anything. There's all kinds of ways to. Any other questions? Well, thank you, and I'll see y'all at the water pouring, and I hope that you have a glimpse of what it is about, and that it will enrich your life as we go through this tonight, and you'll see new things in God's Word that maybe you hadn't seen before. We got to pack up. We won't leave till the morning. Yeah, I'll try to get it put on my computer. I've got it on my computer now. I just didn't have it on the flash drive. Yeah, it's on my phone. Yes, yeah. Yeah, I can do that. Yeah. Yeah. Y'all just have to look at the little screen, okay? All right. Thank y'all.